Mountains bring peace to the people.
This is Mountain Escapes, a backcountry podcast, connecting backcountry enthusiasts like you with the legendary backcountry lodges of British Columbia, Canada. Each episode, we highlight one of BC's unique backcountry lodges through conversation with the lodge owners and operators.
One of the world's finest alpine settings.
Everybody has to have a transceiver, a shovel, and a rope.
Mountain Escapes, a backcountry podcast. Your host is Brad Harrison, who's worked and adventured in remote settings his entire life. He's the executive director of the Backcountry Lodges of British Columbia Association, former owner-operator of Golden Alpine Holidays, and current owner-operator of Call West Alpine Adventures. Now, here's Brad Harrison.
Hi there. Welcome back to Mountain Escapes. We're here today with Brad Sills, owner-operator of Callahan Country's Journeyman Lodge. Welcome, Brad.
Hey, and good morning to you, Brad. It's a beautiful day here on the coast.
Brad, so we just want to hear a little bit about Callahan Country and yourself. Can you give us a bit of the history of Callahan Country? How long has it been in place?
Yeah, so we started Callahan Country back in 1981 when we first applied to the province for a tenor to undertake both cross-country ski and alpine ski touring venue, and have been working diligently for the last 41 years in establishing Callahan Country and Journeyman Lodge in the recreational landscape.
So I'm guessing that your job's pretty all-encompassing, Brad. Can you give us a bit of a piece on what your responsibilities are in running a backcountry lodge like this?
Yeah, I got a laugh when I look back. You know, when we first started, it was, it seemed to be pretty straightforward, this recreational business. I had no idea that, over the course of 41 years, I'd have to become conversant in a wide range of disciplines, everything from, fluid hydraulic transmission through to Aboriginal title, labor law, health regulations. It's quite a diverse range of knowledge that one has to acquire. And it, then on a day-to-day basis, it includes everything from meet and greet to sewage treatment maintenance. So yeah, it's an all-encompassing job description, I would say.
What's your personal background, Brad? How did you end up in this position of managing and owning a lodge like this?
Yeah, I think like all of us, I've had a lifelong passion for skiing, both Nordic and Alpine, raced as a kid, and then had the good fortune of coming to Whistler when I was quite young. I came to the area as a forest ranger and was employed initially with the BC Forest Service out of the Pemberton office. And that gave me the ability to view a lot of landscapes on the Coast Range. And the Coast Range was not well explored in the early 70s. And so we undertook quite a few different trips in various areas and assessed each of them for the possibility of something that we had always wanted to do, which was to build a backcountry hut.
And so has the hut seen quite a bit of transformation over the years since your very first foray?
Yeah, our original hut came to be known as the terrarium because the dormitory, and it shared its space with all of the forest inhabitants for a 100-kilometer radius. We had everything from, pack rats to pine martens to fishers to ermines. Back in the day, as you well remember, we used to ski in leather boots. And of course, these rodents loved the salt on the cuff of the boot. So often in the morning, you'd wake up and half your boot would be gone. And yet you still had a 20-kilometer ski out back out to the highway. They were interesting days for sure.
You are not in the mountains. The mountains are in you.
This is Mountain Escapes, a backcountry podcast.
So, Brad, I'm sure a lot of people aren't totally familiar with how what a backcountry lodge looks like or how it operates. How do you access your lodge?
So I think we're one of the few in the Backcountry Lodge Association that is has a groomed snowcat cross-country trail right into our venue. You travel 14 kilometers up the Callahan Valley and then west towards back towards Squamish, all on groomed cross-country for both skate and classic. Once you get to the lodge, you're right in the subalpine. It's quite a unique experience. From there, then you can go ski touring or what have you. We bring all of the luggage up in a snowmobile trailer that leaves at a regular time each day. So little bit different than most of the offerings in British Columbia.
And so when I get out of the cat or off the snowmobile, can you paint us a picture of what we're going to see when we look at your lodge from the outside and then enter it? What are we going to find?
So the lodge is 5,000 square feet. It's quite a unique building. The history of the company was that it was built by a journeyman tradesman and thus the name. So it's fairly ornate inside. It has 10 bedrooms, 7 bathrooms, indoor plumbing, commercial kitchen, dining room that can sit 50 people, although lodge occupancy is only 24 people overnight. It's nestled at the juncture of two main valleys, the Ring Valley and the Solitude Valley, and the whole area is encapsulated by the Coast Range glaciers that exist, you know, in the 7,600 to 7,900 foot elevation. So the skiing is quite good. The snow gets blown in, has to get over the mountains to reach our destination. So it's unusual for the coast, but we have great dry powder skiing.
And how many staff would you typically have in a winter operation? And what would they, most of them, be doing? What would their job responsibilities be?
So in the lodge itself, we run with a 4-person full-time crew. They're a live-in crew, and there will be the chef, and then what we call the lodge host team. That is usually a couple. And they take care of all of the customer relations, as well as the chamber mating and household cleaning. And then we have a description called outside guy, and he basically takes care of outside operations, runs the luggage back and forth once daily, and does the snow maintenance around the lodge.
What are your typical winter users? What's the profile of your winter user?
Yeah, so we're just right now at a 50% split between Nordic skiers and alpine backcountry skiing. So it's quite a unique setting that way. What we're finding is that there's getting to be more and more of a crossover between the two disciplines, and it's starting to take on more of a European flavor in that people come to ski and their downhill skiing is better, or if the alpine ski touring is better, then they'll opt to do that. And if it's not, then they have no problem switching gear and going skate skiing or classic skiing.
I know this is a bit of a generalization, but where does your typical guest come from? What's their age group? That kind of thing. How would you describe your typical guest?
So historically, we pulled mostly out of Vancouver and quite a bit just off the North Shore, both West and North Vancouver. We were a local phenomena for probably 35 years. In the past 5 years, the reach has extended down the coast to Tacoma, Portland, and Seattle. And we now get about maybe 15 to 20% U.S. visitors. Our demographic, it depends. It's broken into the two types of offerings that we have. The cross-country skiers tend to be more 45 years of age and more, and evenly mixed, possibly with more female participation, whereas the backcountry skiers tend to be a little younger, you know, in the 25 and up, they go all the way up to 75 years of age, I think. And they tend to be probably, I would say, 60% male.
Do you operate a summer business as well?
Historically, we did. Prior to the Olympics, we were running a daily summer venue. However, we have some pretty stiff competition in the Sea to Sky corridor for commercial summer recreation. We have both the Peak to Peak chair on Whistler Blackcomb, which is a fantastic venue at a very challenging price point, and also the Sea to Sky gondola in Squamish. So we've kind of been pushed into a corporate and group venue business during the summer. So yes, we are open, but it is on a group basis.
And so is there much crossover between your summer and winter guests?
Yeah, definitely. And increasingly more so, particularly in the older demographic, the 55 plus. They want to come back. They've had a great time during the winter, and they can't wait to see the beauty of the valley in summertime.
At the risk of slipping into a bit of politics, Brad, did the Olympics have an impact on your business?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, it's like everything. It's pros and cons. The pros were that we got a paved highway in 9 kilometers into our base area. We got BC Hydro, we got fiber optics cable, and we were positioned next to an Olympic venue. The flip side of that is that in our Nordic offering, we are now challenged by having to compete with a government-sponsored entity. So it's it poses its own special merits. But overall, the two together, we operate on a combined ticket, similar to, let's say, what Silver Star and Sovereign Lake have for the Nordic product. And it is growing and it is working. So yeah, it was all in all a very positive event.
British Columbia, Canada is a backcountry skier's paradise, with epic snowfall, vast alpine terrain, and cozy remote backcountry lodges. Your adventure begins here at backcountrylodgesofbc.com.
You know, the Backcountry Lodges Association has 32 members. What would you say that it would be unique to Callahan Country compared to, let's just say, the majority of the other BLBCA members?
I think probably our convenience for visitation is probably the distinguishing factor. We're so close to Vancouver, we're only 100 kilometers away. That affords us the ability to offer nightly venues. So people can just come for one night, which I think is quite unusual in the backcountry lodge venues. We also offer a fairly sophisticated food and beverage program. We employ top line chefs. And so food and beverage is an integral part of our offering. That's not to say that other lodges don't put out fantastic offerings. It is one of our strengths, however. So that and the snowcat access, the ability to come at any time, there's no delays, there's no waiting for helicopters or weather or anything like that. I think those are the distinguishing factors that sets Journeyman Lodge apart from a good number of the other members of the BLBCA.
And so you wouldn't offer a lodge rental offering at any point?
We have in the past. We find them problematic in that we get a different demographic, and it's not one that we see enhancing our business model. It tends to be very loud and celebratory and not so much in tune with the natural environment.
Just going forward, Brad, do you have any specific plans for the future of the lodge? You know, updates and things like that?
Yeah, well, we were recently acquired by Evo Sports out of Seattle, Washington. And they're coming to the table with a whole new set of resources and energy. They're a young company, and they really see that Journeyman Lodge is sort of the hub of where all of their corporate values come and hit the highway. It's where the rubber meets the road. And so we're really looking forward to this new future with Evo and pushing backcountry recreation sort of more to the forefront.
Are you planning on continuing working with Callahan, Brad, or over the long term or short term?
I think that the synergy is really good. I like the fact that they are bringing all this new young energy in. 41 years has taken its toll. So it's nice to see the support of some more passion coming in, and it's re-energized me. So yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to a bright future.
Just kind of wanted to get your sense of just the way the clients are nowadays compared to they were 20 years ago, 40 years ago. Have you seen a change in what the expectations of clients are now?
Oh, most definitely. They were much more independent back in the day. They used to come, you know, fully prepared for any eventuality. The HUD, as it was at that time, was almost secondary. It was kind of like a backup plan to what they were doing, but they were fully skilled, knowledgeable, experienced, and usually undertaking some, you know, pretty significant routines for a day. It was much more impressive than it is these days, where people tend to, at least my clients, tend to hit the slopes, you know, usually not before 8:30 in the morning. And they usually just go up and session, you know, a number of pitches as opposed to truly ski touring and exploring the area. So I think that that's probably the single biggest change is the change from ski mountaineering to, for lack of a better word, yo-yo skiing.
And have you seen a change in staff expectations?
Yeah, I think we've gone through the whole gamut of, you know, this sort of the counterculture back to the land, lodge hosts, chefs. You're typically drawn from, you know, the tree planting experience and looking for winter employment to now, where we typically draw from, you know, venues like fishing lodges or the Rocky Mountaineer or other, you know, commercial operations. And just the level of expertise in the hospitality business has increased significantly over the years.
Have you seen big changes in, I'm going to call it the culture, so the culture of safety and relationships with First Nations and other, you know, visible minorities? Has there been a change in that regard?
Yeah, well, definitely being so close to Vancouver and you know, witnessing the change in demographics in the local market, we've certainly undertaken the encouragement to reach out to those communities and to draw them in. And we're having significant success at the entry level with a number of those groups, introducing them first typically to snowshoeing, and then when they're on the venue, they get to, you know, see people participating in all these other winter sports, and you can actually see them coming back, and, you know, whether it be the next weekend or within a month, and they're renting, you know, cross-country skis, and they're inquiring about backcountry, what's that about, and how do I get into that? And they're fully charged in it. So I think there's some huge wins here for everyone by getting people out of the city in the wintertime and reconnecting them, or connecting them for the first time in many cases to the natural world. This will help everyone, you know, gain an environmental ethic, and hopefully will bring them closer to the issues that are at the heart of, you know, Aboriginal title.
Have you seen a change in the culture, let's just say, of the backcountry lodges of just required safety protocols? Is it a little bit less of the Wild West than it used to be?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, like I described earlier, I mean, we ran an operation that we thought was where the market was at, where the whole industry was moving to at the time. You know, challenging yourself was the thing. It was the reason for being. And now it's not like that at all. Largely because the risk involved in doing those sorts of things has to be very, very carefully calculated. And even those programs that have undertaken that as their business model have had to shift significantly to risk mitigation. So, you know, the Lodge Association has been an absolute leader in this and bringing about the changes that are required to, you know, host people in that capacity. Having said that, there is still, you know, a large demographic that does not want a guided experience and feels quite comfortable guiding themselves, whether that's a Coast Range experience or whether it's shared by other lodges, I'm not sure. But the West Coast snowpack is somewhat easier to predict and to navigate in than perhaps some of the other snowpacks in the province. That might be the explanation for why that is also growing in popularity. I mean, both sides, guided and unguided, are both looking at huge growth curves. It's interesting to watch that.
Would you say from your experience that you would see a difference in travel habits between Whistler-based backcountry skiers or boarders and Lake Louise-based skiers or boarders?
I often sort of smile when I see visitors from, let's say, east of the Okanagan come to our venue, and how practiced and careful they are at the outset of their trips, and how very much more due diligence is exercised, and a lot more caution about everything. Now, whether it's the West Coast lifestyle or it's just, you know, the practical experience with the snowpack here, people from Vancouver tend to be considerably more casual. They definitely address the public bulletin. They do their snow profiles. They look at the history, but they're not quite as intense as people from Eastern BC.
I often, just in my experience, I say people from the Rockies spend most of their ski career looking over their shoulder.
Yeah.
And I just think, I guess your snowpack on the coast is generally more stable than the interior ranges?
I would say so. I mean, that's a big generalization. Certainly we go through cycles that are positively terrifying. And when those are in place, then we have to buckle down on our customers, because they're sort of like children in the schoolyard at that point. They're just not familiar with these types of hazards. So, you know, it's all guns on deck there, making sure everybody understands that things have changed and they need to be a lot more prudent in their behavior.
Generally, do you find that backcountry travelers nowadays are more educated? You know, largely a lot due to Avalanche Canada, I would guess, but do you find they're generally more aware?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, the success of the AST 1 and 2 program is quite literally phenomenal. And the backing that it's gotten from all sectors of the industry is truly amazing. It's very rare that we'll get anybody here that hasn't got at least a level one training. Certainly in all our literature, our pre-trip media, we really encourage that people come here with a current course under their belt.
So a current AST 1, Brad, that's what you should.
Yeah, as a minimum, you know, our staff will have a very strong discussion with anybody that shows up that demonstrates, you know, an unfamiliarity with snow travel, and we'll suggest that they, you know, stay on the cross-country ski trails and get used to their equipment. And then, you know, when they leave, go and take an AST 1 course.
I want to switch gears here a little bit and just talk a bit about climate change and how it's affected your operation, if it has affected your operation.
Well, definitely during the summer, you know, we've had two summers here, 15 and 16, I think they were. And they kind of blur, but, you know, where smoke completely destroyed whatever summer product that we had here. The wildfire situation has been, as everyone knows, out of control. This is a direct relationship to climate change. There can be no doubt about that. And then, of course, the last 3 weeks in the Lower Mainland in British Columbia has been further evidence that we are definitely in a mess here. You know, when you get, we had in Whistler 267 millimeters of rain in a 24-hour period. I don't believe that has ever occurred before. So, and then followed by, you know, cold weather. I mean, it snowed in Vancouver on December 4th, which again is highly unusual. So these patterns are not like anything we've ever seen before.
If you're going to shine up your crystal ball, what do you see going forward in terms of the climate change situation?
Well, I'll speak for the West Coast. So far, climate change for the winter product up until now has actually been somewhat positive, in that we have in the last at least 4 or 5 years, which is way too short a term to predict, but we have been getting, you know, above average snowfalls. However, I think abrupt change is what climate change really is about. And so we could just as easily be faced with absolutely no snow, you know, rising temperatures. It all depends on ocean currents, and being so close to the coast, there's no chance for land to mitigate that. So if we get warm currents coming up from, Chile or the Philippines, then we don't have a product here. So it's really scary to be right on that edge of having had really favorable weather conditions, but knowing that at any given time, we're only 1 degree typically away from economic disaster.
Have you in Callahan Country taken any specific initiatives to at least address your role in climate change?
Yeah, we are. We're exploring the use. We have a small fleet of snowmobiles. We've been reducing them generally over the years. We've gone from 14. We used to use them to move clients. We're down to 6 now. We're investigating the electric snowmobiles for our transportation of food and luggage back and forth. So far, they're not powerful enough to do the one trip up. They're just falling short of that, but I think we'll be replacing those. We've moved to a newer model snowcat that has better emissions controls. We're investigating running river hydroelectric power. So these sorts of things are the things that we're looking at to offset our footprint.
Are you finding that your guests are, you know, aware of climate change, and is it a topic of conversation?
I would like to say yes, but my experience has been generally no. You know, they'll make casual reference to it, but are they really changing anything in their life? I'm not sure. I mean, you hear them talking about travel, you hear them talking about economic growth. It would be more encouraging if you heard more deliberate debates about the negative aspects of continued development.
And what would you, if you, in terms of looking at the BLBCA and how they support you, what initiatives would you be really happy that the BLBCA embarked on in support of yours and other lodges?
I think growth and not just growth through the pursuit of, you know, athletic or recreational behavior, but pursuit of educational programs that reconnect people to the natural landscape. So more of a reliance on nature interpretation. We ran one weekend five summers ago on entomology, and just like a lot of alpine areas, the bugs are really bad in July and August. And so we decided that we were going to make a weekend of it and bring in an entomologist and fully understand the life cycle of all the different insects that are available. We sort of looked at Tofino and their storm watching program that they've had huge success in. When I was much younger and a forest ranger, I remember going out to Tofino in late November and just being battered by the most horrendous weather in the world. And nobody was there. I mean, the fishermen were all battened down. The loggers were all battened down. There was nothing there. And now you go to Tofino in a storm cycle and you cannot get a hotel room. So sometimes, you know, taking natural events and that seem unlikely for public interest, you can turn them around. So I think there's a whole host of things that we could do in our industry to make people more aware of the landscapes that they're visiting and use that as a business model.
Skiing is a dance, and the mountains always lead.
This is Mountain Escapes, a backcountry podcast.
I think you're in charge of the search and rescue group at Whistler. How does the search and rescue piece cross over with your managing and owning a backcountry lodge, if it crosses over?
Yeah, it's interesting. We have about just short of 90,000 skier visits to the Callahan Valley every year. You know, by and large, they're cross-country skiing, but backcountry skiing to a variety of different adjacent mountains is growing. And so when somebody is reported missing, whether it's in our business, if we have a car in the parking lot at the end of the day or not, most operators could simply hand that off to, the RCMP. In my particular case, I have to deal with it right then because it's just going to come back to haunt me later on in the evening when the RCMP call me to go out in my capacity as SAR to find these people. So that's it at a personal level.
Hey, I guess I was interested. I do teach some SAR groups and they all talk about having added pressure because there's more backcountry users. I wonder if you had seen that same effect.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt that the call volume has gone up. I mean, a large part of that is just due to emergency health services or the ambulance service, as it's referred to, and just declining a lot of calls that are in wildlands simply because they can't meet the training standard and the procedure standard required of them by workers' compensation. So they default it to the RCMP, who then in turn delegate it to search and rescue. So yeah, the call volumes generally have been going up across the province. The incidence of trauma with the rise in gravity sports, whether they be skiing or snowmobiling or hang gliding or any of those, have just risen the incidence of trauma in the mountains. So all of the SAR teams are definitely busier than they were, let's say, 20 years ago.
Do you foresee any solutions to that likely growing phenomena?
Well, if you look around the world, the most successful programs have been ones that had education at the forefront. There's been a lot of talk about enforcement and, you know, penalization of people that fail to do certain things. I don't see them working. Well, certainly they haven't worked to date. You know, I think if we were to adopt, and I think it's coming, if you look at any resource in the province, it's licensed. So if you go hunting, you need a hunting license. If you go fishing, you need a fishing license. Incorporated into those programs, you know, hunting has the core program. There's an educational piece, and that includes an environmental ethic and a knowledge of the land base and those sorts of things. So I think in time, that's where we're headed, that all winter recreationalists are going to have to take a course. There's going to have to be a fee paid for that. That fee, if you take the Washington State model, will offset, you know, plowed parking areas at key ski touring routes. It will help fund search and rescue, and it will generally raise the standard of education that people have in the backcountry.
It's obvious that you have an amazing wealth of knowledge, you know, both running your lodge and running the SAR group at Whistler. And it's really great that you've been able to share that with all our listeners. Before I let you go, I just wonder if you'd be willing to share a funny story, something that happened over your long tenure that stuck with you.
Yeah, one that comes to mind is back in the day, we had an old Tucker snowcat, and it had a diesel engine in it, and I was driving it, and it hadn't been working that well. And anyways, we were about 3/4 of the way up to Callahan Lake, and I noticed that I couldn't pull the throttle back on it. It was just climbing the hill at an even rate. And then when we hit a flat spot, of course, it sped up, which indicated to me that, you know, I had a stuck injector or something in it, and I couldn't control it. I couldn't turn it off. It didn't matter what I did, turn the ignition off. There was nothing I could do to stop this thing. It was a runaway. And I had, I think, 11 ski tours in the back. And so I was yelling at them. They were quite noisy machines. And we're going back to the 70s here. So, you know, quite old technology. The machine itself was probably built in the 50s. So I was having to yell to them that I would keep a straight course, and they needed to throw their packs out first. And then there were rear doors on the back of it. And then they would have to jump out in single order, sort of like parachuting out of an aircraft. And once I got them all out, I was able to stop the engine by jamming it into neutral, which sent the revs on the engine crazy. And then I had to run out and open the bonnet on it and stick my head down inside this roaring engine and hit the air flapper that cut off the oxygen to the engine. So that was an interesting day.
Likely not WSBC approved.
Likely not, no. So we're back in the early days. Things have gotten much safer since then.
Well, Brad Sills, we want to thank you for sharing your time. Our listeners, I'm sure, have really enjoyed your experiences and wisdom. Brad Sills, owner-operator of Callahan Country Lodge.
This has been Mountain Escapes, a backcountry podcast, sponsored by the Backcountry Lodges of British Columbia Association. Find your next adventure at backcountrylodgesofbc.com. Thanks for listening.